Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Nervous.
I am Sir Jimmy the Excited. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club, where today, well, we're not talking about the book. We're also pausing the rewatch on House of the Dragon season one because we have a trailer. We have the official trailer for season two, not a sneak peek, not a teaser, the full trailer. Plus, Entertainment Weekly has their typical big release, you know, tons of articles coming out, flooding the market. And we have a lot to talk about. We have some Aegon the Conqueror quotes for that project that's coming up. Some reinforcement about the Duncan Egg series. And then, of course, a ton of stuff about House of the Dragon. Matt, how you doing, man? You get some sleep?
Oh, man, yeah, I'm doing much better. You know, I feel like I finally got a little bit of a schedule going here. Nice. Things have kind of calmed down here at the Brady household. We'll have to see, with little ones, I suppose. It just changes all the time. Okay, so, you know, right now things are good. So we're rolling with it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I been busy, but everything kind of gets paused whenever there's big House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones or a Song of Ice and Fire news. I had to awkwardly pause in the middle of work to watch the trailer, and I've only got to watch it twice. How many times have you watched it?
I watched it once. That's it. Just one time. I have to say that I am, this is why I'm saying I'm nervous, Jimmy, is that I cannot say for sure that I am super excited about this trailer. Not that the trailer itself is bad or anything, but the fact that it's kind of just the trailer we already saw. Like, a lot of this footage to me was trailer that was included in both of the Greens and Blacks trailer.
Yeah. But it's kind of pieced together into more cohesive, and there are other shots. I mean, there's some new stuff there too, but it's kind of pieced together in a way that I think kind of really, obviously we have the polarizing like Greens versus Blacks, right? So we have a teaser for each side. That's fun. But I think that this is like the true meaning of the season where we see, yes, we are going to go to war. Neither are probably going to win, but there's also a lot of little like hints towards dissent within the camps, mainly between Rhaenyra and Daemon. So I thought it captured that. I like this trailer more than the teasers personally, because like the whole Blacks versus Greens thing, I don't think is like the most fun out of all the right. things to talk
the way
about.
To do it.
But I mean, dude, the dragon scenes.
Oh yeah.
Gosh, dude. Like, I was blown away. This felt very epic, you know, more epic than anything we saw in season one. And maybe it's just the way it was pieced together, but I could feel like the escalation of it all.
I think if they'd done the trailers the other way around, I would be, and I'm obviously like incredibly excited for House of the Dragon season two. Let's not get that, you know.
Yeah, let's say, man,
everyone was like messaging me being like, dude, what do you think of the trailer? I was like, I mean, I feel like even when Teresa watched it with me and she watched the other trailers once, she's like, I feel like we saw a lot of that. I was like, yeah, I kind of did too. So I think maybe now that I'm looking at it, they should have dropped this trailer first. And I don't know. It's just a weird way to do it. Because like, when you drop two trailers to the mass audience, are they really going to sit back and watch both? I don't know. I'm sure they have marketing executives over there at Warner Brothers who they're not the best company when it comes to really knowing how to run a entertainment business. But HBO seems to have their heads. So I'm sure they thought about it. But yeah, I mean, it's good. There's definitely some big stuff. We're going to be talking about it, obviously. There's like the big sort of takeaway from this, which we'll get into here in a second, but overall, I mean, it was like an 8 for me. It wasn't like 10 out of 10. Oh my God, I'm losing my mind, just because I feel like I saw some of that stuff in the other two trailers.
Yeah. I think most people probably watch this and not the teasers, if I'm being honest, like the general.
Yeah. I would imagine that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't care until they see the official tag on it. Yeah. Right. I am not the biggest trailer person. Like, I see people just dooming or praising things just based on the trailer. Like, making a really good trailer is a different thing than making a good season of television. Okay, the Wheel of Time is a great example. Their trailers, in my opinion, were pretty good. Rings of Power also,
that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit here
too. I'll say the first season trailer, I was hyped, bro. I stayed up for it and I didn't like that show at all.
No, so. It was awful. But I love how just like with season Warner, we were kind of nervous, remember, for House of the Dragon. a little bit. We were saying, I mean, we knew it was going to be good, but it was going up against a lot of competition. I mean, it was going up against, you had, I think was it Moon Knight and She-Hulk, which now, you know, She-Hulk's probably the worst thing in the MCU, but, you know, still like the Marvel shows at that point were still like big deal. Now they've kind of died off a little bit because people have like Marvel fatigue. And also Rings of Power, I think Andor had come out at the exact same time. So there was like a lot of comp and like football was starting. So there was a lot of competition on Sundays. And they were like, nope, we're going to launch the same time because we believe in our show. And here, we did not know that House of the Dragon trailer was coming out. We did know that Rings of Power was dropping their trailer because they had announced that, hey, everyone get hyped for the trailer. Mm-hmm. And just so you know, it has been shown on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, that Rings of Power's trailer has more dislikes than likes on YouTube. And House of the Dragon is the polar opposite, obviously. So Warner Brothers, again, just like, we're just going to drop it same day and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, Warner Brothers is saying it with their chest. I think that they understand that
it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's also just a different dynamic, though, is like with the Rings of Power, it's trying to continue the legacy of maybe the best, one of the, if not the best trilogy of all time in theaters, right?
Until Dune 3 comes out.
Until Dune 3, baby. But, you know, Lord of the Rings is tremendous. And I don't think anybody that loved that movie necessarily thought that Rings of Power was going to be like a great idea. But a lot of people were like, let's wait and see. And we saw and we didn't necessarily like. I will say, I think that there's a large amount of people who don't like Rings of Power just because they decided to cast, you know, people that they apparently don't like in roles, which is ridiculous. I think that kind of hijacked the narrative. But as a show, like without any of the culture war nonsense that people get into, I didn't think any of the casting was wrong. I didn't have a real problem with any of the casting, but I just didn't think the show was very good.
I agree. So, it felt, if the show felt, in all honesty, real quick here, I mean, it felt all over the place. We haven't really like done like a sort of review of Rings of Power, but it felt all over the place. You know, like a lot of it you could tell was writing. I didn't really have a problem with any of the actors or anything. I kind of found Elrond and the dwarves to be sort of what I thought was like the most fun
part
of the show.
Yeah.
Like and it's just like they went to all these different regions and they all felt very like different. I see that they're trying to do world building, but the world did not feel connected at all.
Yeah. For me,
it felt like it seriously felt, now that I'm remembering it, like they said, all right, you're gonna like, we're gonna have a group of writers and each set of writers is going to write like what's going on in each area, and like that doesn't work cohesively as like a supposed TV show connected story.
Yeah, I also think that Rings of Power is trying to have a little more edge to it and maybe bring some of the characters more down to life, but like Tolkien writing in the voice of like a myth was translated fairly well in the Peter Jackson films. Now, I do know that there's some Tolkien people out there that hate the Peter Jackson movies, which is, you know, okay, that's fine. Everyone has their own opinion. But I think for the most part, people like the adaptation piece of it. So I think that with Rings of Power, they tried to appeal too much to like that little grittier side, little low to the ground human experience where like, you know, Galadriel, I feel like the elves didn't have that mystique that they did, that mythic status that they did in the movies. And that's a hard thing to pull off in a TV show other than a movie, right? Because you have to fill time with dialogue and all these things. So I just didn't think the writing was very good. Whereas on the flip side, House of the Dragon not only reminded us of the good parts of Game of Thrones, but still had its own distinct style as well. Much more colorful. The palette was much more vibrant than it was in the original show, which I think was a good distinction. And they did a nice job of going backwards in time and showing us the differences between the time periods, whether it be socially or even just how Westeros is ran. Rings of Power didn't feel like it had any of that connection to a timeline, to be honest with you. So I think Max knows that they can just punch Rings of Power in the mouth whenever they feel like it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Do you want to talk about the trailer? Or do you want to dive into some of the news first?
Well, I mean, I think we kind of talked about the trailer. I mean, for the most part, I mean, the most interesting thing about the trailer is whenever.
Well, I do feel like we should do like a I was kind of planning on doing like a breakdown of it.
Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
Do you want to do that? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let me get it shared up on the screen here. Sometimes, you know, they freak out and they won't let you do it, but I think they will here. I probably won't post this to YouTube because YouTube will blast me for it.
Yeah.
So
plus we're late as far as reaction goes on YouTube. People do it like the second it comes.
Yeah. Up. I just don't really care about doing reactions anymore, to be honest. Like just based. Like the like, you know, like, like
yeah,
unless, yeah, unless it's something I've like, you know, didn't know was going to happen. So, you know, a lot of these shots, again, we have seen from, you know, from the get go, from the other trailer. Now, this is really the big sort of takeaway from this. And this seems to be what I'm seeing on Twitter, everyone talking about, which is the stuff in the north. OK, with Craig and Stark, you know, Jacerys Valyrian fly or Lucerys flies up. No, Jacerys Valyrian flies up. Yeah, because Luke is dead. He got eaten by Vhagar. So anyway, so they fly up. And he's going to be spending time with Craig and Stark, sort of convincing him to join Rhaenyra's side is the plan. But the fact that we're going back to Winterfell and back to the Wall, which also like is kind of interesting that he takes him to the Wall.
Like, oh, yeah.
That's something we haven't really talked about. Like, why isn't he just at Winterfell? Like, clearly he's supposed to just fly to Winterfell to say, hey, we want you to join sides, but he takes him to the Wall. So clearly he's like, this is where the true like war is. And he's very concerned about what's going on beyond the Wall.
I mean, also just a chance he wanted to see the Wall, right? Because like, remember, people aren't traveling just wherever they want at this time. Like there's people who will live their entire life in Westeros and never see the Wall. So maybe right. It's possible that he just wanted to see it, but I think you're right. I think it's most likely going to diverge into a kind of like a subtle conversation or a side conversation about how, like, you know, the War of Men is whatever, but we have a threat coming from the north, which is kind of hilarious because this is so many centuries before,
right?
You know, it's a century or whatever, or how many centuries is it? Four? I can't remember.
How many centuries is this before Game of Thrones?
Yeah, it's a long time before the main show, so it'd be funny to see.
Like, I think it's about 100 and it's
I always forget.
They said I think it's around like 150, 200 years ish before.
Yeah, so basically what I'm trying to say is how many decades have they been saying, you know, hey.
Oh yeah.
Norse going to come with some deadly force, so maybe that's why we see the, you know, kind of the boy who cried wolf type of deal treatment in season 1 of Game of Thrones. Here's one thing I'm worried about. And this is from the book nerd of me, okay? The Night's Watch should be full of people who are a bit more prestigious than we saw in season 1. This is still at a time where the Wall, I don't think, has been completely diluted to just people who are pillaging and you know, committing crimes. There are going to be people who are taking that position with pride, right? More Benjamins and Mormonts rather than, you know, Small Paul or whoever else. So I hope that we see the Wall in better condition. It hasn't degraded as much. I fear that the budget maybe didn't match that. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So here's a picture. So this shot is actually, I don't think it's in the trailer. I think it's just one of those other shots, like, cause they also released some still images and stuff. But there he is in all his glory, Lord Craig and Stark. Now we finally get to see it. And I am getting hyped about this, right? Warden of the North, the Lord of Winterfell and House of the Dragon season 2. Again, looks like they're at the Wall and you get to see that Stark emblem right there. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like, man, we were talking about, do they open with it? I feel like they need to, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, is it going to, there's going to clearly be some time going on because
we're going to be cutting away to these scenes as blood and cheese is being set up.
You think so?
Mm-hmm. And don't be surprised if there's some sort of juxtaposition between that scene and something in the north.
You think they're going to do like a big back and forth?
Yeah, I think the whole episode will be cutting back to him in the north. I think Craig and Stark's going to have a good amount of screen time because he's important. So I'll leave it at that. He's important. So I think that we will probably see a decent amount of him. Okay. Also, look at ice on that back.
I know. What do you think about the look, man? I think it looks sick.
I saw someone say, man, really? Stark cloaks didn't change for 170 years. I thought that was kind of funny.
No, I don't need to.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Let's. So yeah, then we got this shot again in the trailer. So we'll go back to the trailer here. But that is sort of like, that is like the one. If I had to pick something, like, that's like the biggest thing is obviously, yeah, you know,
for me, I'm more interested in the fact that Rhaenyra is basically asking Daemon if she has his allegiance, you know, and then we're seeing mm-hmm. Daemon flying on a dragon by himself. And I think Nettles is going to tie into this greatly. A lot of that descent is going to be sowed within their relationship while still being on the same side, which is really interesting.
Yeah. And I do love how the trailer does that back and forth between the two. And then there's Rhaenyra holding the sword. Time for her to pick up the sword. I do like where she talks about how she is actually sort of nervous about the position she feels like she's put the realm in, like a war, like she feels. And that's because that's one of the things that Rhaenys says in the last in the season where we're watching right now, season one, where she's like, she's the only one actually holding the realm together right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Allison's grievance, I think, is a bit of a more of a personal one. And also with Allison, I think that she is more concerned with where her family stands and her children mm-hmm. rather than the realm. I mean, Otto frames it to her that this is going to send the chaos, you know, the realm into chaos. But like, you know, you don't know that. You don't know.
I mean, this scene right here makes me think it's after Blood and Cheese. He's like, when mm-hmm. Aegon's like, what are we going to do about it? And he's sitting there. He doesn't look, I mean, on the other hand, he doesn't look as pissed as somebody who should be after the event that is Blood and Cheese spoiling it.
Well, I think it could just be them deciding how they're going to go about the war, if they're going to try any more tidings. I mean, or they might be talking about the fumble that they made at the end of season one and killing one of Rhaenyra's sons. He might be saying, well, now what do we do? You know, very.
But he does. But interesting point here is that he does have the dagger. He has Aegon sure the Conqueror. He has Aegon the Conqueror's dagger, which is that this whole dagger deal might be a big thing throughout this. Kind of like, in a way, it's almost like a chance for them to kind of do some of the Blackfyre story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, with the sword Blackfyre, that's, you know, Aegon the Aegon Blackfyre. Same thing. Remember, it's like everyone kind of views him as the person. Well, here he has Aegon the Conqueror's dagger, and we know the story of now in House of the Dragon here, the story with Aegon the Conqueror, his dagger, and the prophecy that Viserys tells Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
So that is kind of interesting.
I wonder where the dagger is going to end up at the end of this all, that's like the be, end of that's the show.
Be interesting.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are like, I don't care because it's tied to the Night King, but I'm more.
That's
like,
kind of like the whole said, point.
I'm also just a little bit more curious about just from like, how does it end up, you know, in season one? Like, just the traveling dagger is very interesting to me.
Well, it's still a big deal in the books because it still might be the thing that kills whoever, even if it's Euron in the books, it still could be the thing. Yeah, ooh. There we go. Yeah, dignity. I want revenge. So that's like,
that's post Blood and Cheese.
Post blood and cheese. And it's interesting that Aemond is the one saying we need dignity after he just like caused this whole thing to kick off.
guys, let's de-escalate.
yeah. I mean, again, just like we talked about in the other trailers, you know, just looking at it here, the big sweeping shots of the dragons, we're going to get some big, huge wars. Going in and out of forests when there's dragons above is one, a smart, like, military, I think. That way you don't want to burn your own men or whatever. You know, like, that's interesting. Or that's, you know, like a good tactic, because that is kind of one of the only ways to help alleviate.
An open field does not work against dragons, which we saw in season 7
Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yeah.
When Jaime almost kills Daenerys.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. And there's Daemon saying, I didn't think they'd be so eager to die, talking about them obviously meeting them in like the open field.
Yeah. And then of course we see Corlys Velaryon pledging his boats.
There's Daemon, Amaraxi. I mean, dude. Yeah, there's a lot of epic shots in there. I think this shot you were talking about. Do you accept
this is the most important ruler?
And Daemon just sort of looks, And Damon just sort of like doesn't really acknowledge that.
And it cuts to another scene and close up on her face. And you can kind of see through her visuals that she's kind of on the edge. It looks like she's almost pleading.
Yeah.
Dragon screeching is what the thing. And it should, it's just Damon riding off on Caraxes. So sick, dude.
Yeah. And then here's Allison. Would you have us prevail? Not like this, you know, which is funny because the episode that we were going to talk about today before we got the big news and the trailers, you know, rewatching it is like Allison. So the episode for anybody who's listening, as we're doing our rewatch, we would be talking about today is episode 7, which is the Driftmark episode where Damon and Rhaenyra get together. Right. You know, what's funny about that is she's talking to her father and she's talking to Laris. After she's sort of been like, I don't want any part of like killing anybody or anything. And she's now kind of like, that day may come, Laris. So the innocent Allison is like, she clearly knows. And I think that is something that may begin to get lost even more as this season progresses.
Oh, I think everyone's going to lose a bit of their humanity this season. I mean, and that's kind of the central piece of this, right, is that no one is going to really win at the end.
Yeah, and here we go. There's another clear shot of Craigan Stark and like the wall and the north all behind him. Actually, they're probably staring at it, and this is the shot front looking. You know,
I'm not gonna lie, he looks a little older here. Not Craigan, the boy.
I know. That's what I was saying. Because they made it, it sort of seemed like it was. Jimmy, let me tell you a story. You remember last year I went to Italy, and on my trip to Italy, I accidentally got stuck in Spain. The flight I was going through got delayed in England, and I had to go to Madrid for a night. And let me tell you, as someone who doesn't speak Spanish, that was very difficult. Thankfully, my wife does, but I think it's probably high time that I learn some Spanish. Because you literally never know when you may need it.
And there's only one option if you're going to be learning a foreign language, and that is Rosetta Stone. As the world's most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app, it truly immerses you in the language that you would like to learn.
Rosetta Stone is a trusted expert for nearly 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and more.
And we're talking about fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. I mean, for one, no English translation. So you really learn to speak, listen, and most importantly, think in that language. It's an intuitive process that helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, and of course, to sentences. It's designed for long-term retention.
And they've got speech recognition, a built-in true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent.
And we're talking about how convenient this app is all the time. Flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or on your desktop on your own schedule.
And it's an amazing value. They have a lifetime membership that has all 25 languages for any and all trips and languages you need in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. I mean, that's a steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Bend the Knee listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. You know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. At my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. All in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday host to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids, to hits for everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Going to be immediate.
But oh no, I think they said it's supposed to be there was a timeline release, and I mean it is immediate. It's like I think maybe 2 weeks after.
Well, his hair looks a lot. His hair does not look as but I mean, I don't know.
A kid that grew up, you know, a year and a half for someone that's young is, you know, you can go through huge changes. And I will say I do think there's a pretty good visual difference there.
Yeah. That's clearly post blood and cheese, you know.
The enemy without maybe fought with swords. The enemy within is more insidious. You know, kind of talking about how they're going
to have to be battling the demons. That's a cool shot too, right there, by the way. Oh, yeah. That's just a cool camera angle.
Yeah. Yeah, the cinematography is banging in this.
Yeah, and then there is more than one way to fight a war, and then we see the people below the Red Keep hyping it up. And then we see like the franticness going on in King's Landing. I mean, it's I think this season is going to be pretty huge.
I think it's so. And now we can kind of talk about, right, you know, what we heard about what Sarah Hess had said. And essentially she was asked in the Entertainment Weekly interview, what do you think? Why 8 episodes instead of 10? And then she said, we really didn't have a choice in the matter. Is kind right. of what she said. So I think, and what she says in this interview, a lot of people are taking that as like, oh, show's doomed, which is ridiculous. But she basically says that absolutely hits the ground running after the final finale. So basically saying like, we're locked in, things are going to be happening, right? Yeah, so Hess declined to comment on the reduced season 2 order from 10 episodes to 8, but notes it wasn't really our choice. The very last tracking shot, which is a close-up of Rhaenyra as she learns Luke's death, offers a visual representation of what Darcy is talking about. And then she's just talking about how Rhaenyra is devastated. But this is kind of thrown in here haphazardly into this article, which is kind of standard for Entertainment Weekly. I'm not a big fan of Entertainment Weekly at all, actually. I think that they're pretty dog shit, if I'm being honest. They've done some pretty shoddy journalism in the past and have clear biases. But I do not think that it's as big of a deal as people will make it out to be, because George was very open with this on the blog and talking about how they basically had to make a decision on where to end the season and what to put into season 3. And I also believe, if I'm not mistaken, it probably has something to do with budget, because this season looks like the budget had to have been much higher, much higher.
Huge. Yeah. And some of that, too, is also they had a lot of COVID restrictions when they were filming, you know, mm-hmm. and that was still sort of under the pandemic. They've also said they've already begun writing season 3. Like, you know, we know it's obviously not getting canceled or, you know, anything like that. But just so that is out there. Yeah, I feel like it's probably that quote is probably taken a little bit out of context, made to seem like, ooh, like we've sort of known that it was going to be 8 episodes. And there was also the report we had before where the showrunners were sort of given the freedom to decide what they wanted to do. And you and I've talked about the fact that there's only so much content in this story itself. Like it's just not as big of a, it's not as big of a story as like Game of Thrones, right? I mean, Game of Thrones has, even if it ended at season 5 when Jon Snow, you know, dies, like if that's like right where the show ended, was right where the books is, I mean, just that alone, I mean, you're talking about like tons of point of view characters. You're talking about things that take place over multiple countries, essentially, right? You've got all of these different regions inside of Westeros itself. This is like, really, it's kind of all like King's Landing and the war, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. And not to mention that, you know, the 10 episodes where we set up a lot of stuff. I mean, the first 5 episodes of the show weren't supposed to exist. And apparently George kind of said like, no, you guys have to tell this part of the story or people are going to be invested. And he was right. I think that we've built a lot of good faith. Now the pace of it was pretty relentless because of the time jumps. I do think that season 2 is going to be more about like, things are going to be happening, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And me and you've talked about this. I talked about last episode. I like episodes that are a little bit quieter, a little bit slower. I don't think we're going to have too many episodes that are like that this season. I could see maybe 1 or 2 trying to die down a little bit for the next big thing happens. But what we will have are moments that are a little bit quieter. And that's going to affect different people different ways. I think based on what we've seen in the trailer, what we know, where we know the story's going in 8 episodes, I actually feel like the general audience who really likes the big battles, all the episodes with action in season 1 are the highest rated, but based on the general audience, I think that it's going to be a big hit with the general population. Maybe some of us who are a little bit close to it are going to wish that there was a little bit more time to breathe, possibly. But, you know, I saw people opining about how there's only going to be 3 seasons now and this and that, but me and you both said, you know, we think that
that's been the plan the whole time. I feel like,
yeah, I less is more. Mostly
we were talking like, you'd have to stretch it thin to get 5 seasons, like 4. Oh, we felt was like maybe that, like we were like, there's no way you could possibly get more than 5 seasons out of it. Like,
no,
if you did eight episodes a season, we sort of felt like 4 might be like even pushing it. You and I kind of said like 30 episodes would be like 4 seasons of 8 or 3 seasons of 10. But I mean, if it's 3 seasons and it's, you know, 10, 8, and 8, I think that's kind of perfect. Remember also that they could have episodes that go above an hour, right? Normally it's like 50 minutes is the time. Because even season 8 of Game of Thrones, like some of those episodes went over like the normal 50 minute time limit.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Long Night's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So I mean, really, you did almost get 7 episodes if you look at the total like number of minutes.
Yeah. And also this isn't Game of Thrones. This isn't where like we have to, you know, we needed a lot more time to breathe in the normal show. I don't think that's necessarily the case for this. You know, this is a war. Things are going to happen fast. People are going to react accordingly to awful things that are happening. But I really don't have much concern about it being 8 episodes, especially if what George and Ryan Condell said were true, which might be what Sarah Hess meant, by the way. She might have said, well, we as the writers didn't have anything to do with that, which would be factual, right?
George. Yeah, it felt like that was George and a showrunner thing.
I mean, they made that decision, from what I understand, before they even started shooting. So this isn't like they were working on 10 and then they were told to cut it to 8. You know what I'm saying? So, and there's a chance if it's a budget thing where you want so much money per episode that season 3 could end up being 10 episodes. That's actually because there's going to be a lot more falling out and, you know, dialogue scenes, political scenes, if you will, rather than big armies marching back and forth. I'm just very curious to see what the pacing of it is. I am totally okay with the rule of cool and having a lot of explosions and action, but I do hope that, you know, the standard for the dialogue continues to stay where it was. I thought the writing was fairly awesome in season 1. I don't think that that's going to change. You know, Miguel is gone, but I don't think it's that big of a deal.
No. Nope, yeah. I'm with you. I'm not too worried about it in terms of like the 8 episodes thing. We've talked about it. I'm excited for it. I'm ready, you know, for House of the Dragon season 2. Real quick, I did want to pull up a couple quotes I had sort of saved.
And while you pull those up, I just want to comment for everyone out there. If you haven't seen the stills of Vermithor, my God.
So real quick here, then we're going to switch gears and talk a little bit about Dunkin' Egg, because there's some Dunkin' Egg news that came out too. So Olivia Cook, right, who plays Allison, was talking about Blood and Cheese, which we talked about. Now it's almost like confirmed that this is like season 1 episode, when George Martin himself has said it's going to be crazy. Like, we're telling you right now, if you are unfamiliar with this thing, we think you and I've talked about it. I think it might be worse than The Red Wedding in like the sense of like shock. It's going to be insane.
It's a monumental moment.
A huge moment. Yeah. So she says, I'd just say it is Game of Thrones. Expect the worst. Expect the very worst possible and then double it. I don't know what else to say without heavily spoiling it, but it is tenuous.
Yeah.
Everyone is hyping this. Like the fact that George Martin said that Blood and Cheese is going to be like, he said he had a hard time with it. And he wrote it. And this is the same guy who just like, you know, loves writing these like terrible, you know, love the Red Wedding and Purple Wedding and all that stuff. And when George Martin said it, and now you're seeing some of the actors come out and talk about it, they're like, ooh, it's like, it's pretty brutal. I think, I think it has to be the ending of episode one.
Yeah, we do risk overhyping it and people being like, that was it. You know, because let's not forget that, you know, we live in a culture where people are sharing videos of people like getting shot daily. So right. The desensitization of the to violence is pretty great nowadays with the way we share media. But I think that rewatching season one, and I know you feel the same way as I did, but there was a lot of scenes in season one that were very hard to sit through. I can only imagine they're going to take that same visceral approach to this. And I don't think it's going to be as subtle as you and I had kind of postulated. Like me and you had thought that maybe they would show a shadow on the wall for types of thing. You know, we're not going to get into what it is, but I am actually expecting the opposite. I think it's going to be brutal, dude. I think it's going to be.
Yeah. Now, the more I think about it now, the more I think about how they're going to do it. And I'm just like, I think it's going to be
in your face.
Yep. I think they're just going to show it. I think they're just going to show the whole deal. It's going to be insane.
And we should also note that yes, George Martin does write these scenes, but the show has always been far more gratuitous than the books.
Right.
For instance, Theon's whole arc in the show, and Sansa also being added into that arc kind of, you know, all that stuff is way more gratuitous than the books were. Also, there's something to be said for the visual medium being more impactful to people. You know, I read a lot of really disturbing things, but I find myself like season one of the House of the Dragon rewatch. I'm like, man, it's making me squeamish. Whereas books, I can read almost anything and it doesn't really bother me. Same thing with manga and comics. I find manga and comics disturbing stuff to be worse because I actually have to visualize it. I think I'm kind of retracting my opinion that it might be a little bit of a more like artsy creative thing. I think they're just going to be, I think it's going to be gory. I think it's going to be very brutal.
Yeah. All right. Hey, let's shift gears here. So we did get another quote here about Aegon's Conquest. So we just got a ton of like Game of Thrones news this week. So Aegon's Conquest prequel writer Madison Tomlin on bringing the series to life and connecting it with George R. R. Martin. In speaking to George, it became really clear this is history. Treat it like this is what happened. Unlike the original series, I don't have thousands of pages to go off to adapt. I've got a couple hundred that I'm really focused on. And in those pages of Fire and Blood, there's a lot of clues. It kind of turns into doing Napoleon or Alexander the Great or doing some great historical figure where we know a lot about the guy who we know where he was, who we know who he conquered and, you know, who he lived with and where and we know who died. Then that all becomes the plot. And then it becomes my job. But what did it actually mean thematically? How did it feel? What were the emotions when this person died and this person lived? We don't have that context. We don't know what anybody said. Yeah. So this is, So this is even more sort of different than really the other two books. I mean, the other two shows like Duncan Egg, we have direct source material. House of the Dragon, actually, because George wrote those novellas back in the day that, you know, then got expanded in World of Ice and Fire, and Fire and Blood actually just pulls pretty much those over directly. Those are actually even more detailed than Aegon's Conquest. Like Aegon's Conquest is literally just one big chapter in World of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood. And it's been, I think it was sort of published somewhat as a novella in this like other thing. But it's really is more sort of just like a big history text document of like this happened. There is some direct dialogue in there, but it's by far the least detailed of any of the stories that are being adapted.
Yeah, and the reason why is because it was further back in history, so there's less sources to go off of and documents being preserved and things like this. So it actually does make sense that Aegon's conquest would be more nebulous. There's a lot of mystery around things that happened in that era. What is the truth of these things? The two sisters, you know, how did they actually interact, both being married to Aegon? There's a lot there. I think seeing the comments there talking about how do you thematically pull this together, the emotion of it all, that shows you that that person probably has a good idea of what they're doing. They're not saying, I just can't wait to make Harrenhal. You know, that would worry me more right. if someone was focusing on that. But they're saying that the connective tissue of the show is their job. That is correct. The connective tissue, not inventing all new things, but taking what has been given to them and then expanding upon it, making it true and more of a human experience is really important. So I think this is a good sign. Obviously it's very little, but it's cool to hear about the show. I mean, it seems like it's really going to happen, which is amazing. Yeah. There is definitely going to be a lot more of filling in the details on that show, depending on what they go with.
Like, yeah.
Is it a season? Is it two seasons? I don't know. I think
it could be like seven seasons.
Well, that's the thing. And that's what I was about to say is I think Aegon's Conquest could actually be a show that's more similar to Game of Thrones than House of the Dragon is. Right. Because you're telling a story about a conqueror coming and taking over the land, but that doesn't happen overnight. And there's a ton of politics that are involved. And then, of course, the faith get involved. And then you have heirs to the throne and religion.
You have like a love triangle.
A love triangle of sorts, right? And then right. you also have Dorne and rebellions. Like the areas on the map that they are going to have to try to take over, that being the North or Dorne or the Reach or whatever, they all have to be flushed out with personalities as well, which we know that there are historical figures that take place or I'm sorry, that are sitting in these places. But it isn't as simple as just introduce them, say, hey, this is it. They were burned. They got taken over. We have to flush out those people and make us care about them. That might take a lot more time than people realize. And this is, again, outside of like House of the Dragon, this is a Westeros-wide show. This is right. not going... I would be shocked if this show only focused on Aegon and the two and the sisters, because for me, that's not enough for an epic show. Because House of the Dragon gets away with it because there's so many Targaryens. Like, there's so many, you know what I mean? And then you have the court around them. Whereas this, I think, is going to be much more about the land. So you could... In theory, you could make this show a couple seasons long, make some subplots, invent some stuff, have George help you for the love of God. But, you know, you could start season one be all about getting the North and then season two be about Dorne, you know, trying to conquer Dorne.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, is that something that House of the Dragon doesn't really have, again, like you said, because there's so many characters in it, there aren't really a lot of like original characters in House of the Dragon. There were in Game of Thrones, right? Like there was like Roz, you know, like the whore who they sort of like took mm-hmm. and they said, we're going to kind of blend her into some of the other women that work at the brothels and kind of like have her fill a couple roles. Whereas mm-hmm. like, that's not a character in the book. And, you know, you saw a lot of characters get other people's storylines because they had to sort of fill it out. Whereas this, there's a lot of room to just create original characters like this random person at the court who's like a Littlefinger type person. Or, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of room for the writers to go in and sort of create stuff. Or George can, I'm sure they're not just going to be willy-nilly creating whatever they want. I'm sure George will be heavily involved, but that is kind of something that will be done more with this, because you have to stretch it out further than you do with the other ones since you don't have as much source material.
Yeah I think also expanding on these things, like if we counted like the characters that we care about, let's just say it's 20. I don't think it necessarily is 20, but the challenge is that you're going to have, and I would hope that an Aegon the Conqueror show would also feature like main shots and main plots of the North, of the Reach, of Dorne.
The Stormlands, yeah.
And fleshing them out. And I hope that they do a better job than the main show did when it comes to Dorne, and don't just introduce them randomly in like, season three or four, which I know the books do.
And knee-jerk them out of there.
Yeah, I know the books do, but like we're talking again about a different type of audience, a different type of medium. I think introducing them early on is actually a better idea. Same thing with Euron, right? Like Euron just, it didn't work in the show, in my opinion. And that's because they decided to cut some of the Iron Island stuff out, which was very...
Well, they also decided to go in a very different... because they focused heavily on the Night King, as opposed to like in the books, it seems like Euron may be like the main villain.
Yes. So I think introducing all these different areas like earlier on is a good idea. You know, maybe towards the end of season one, start expanding it out a little bit and maybe even create other storylines in there. You know, like Dorne isn't, I imagine, and I just keep saying Dorne, but I'll just run with that.
No,
like,
that's
Dorne isn't perfect, right? Like there's probably bad things happening via like people vying for power, treaties with other places. Like there's going to be a lot of that stuff. So Aegon the Conqueror is not an easy show to make, I would like to say. I think if you wanted to focus on just the conquest and Aegon himself and making him the central character and all be about him, then movies would have maybe been the better option. Like a trilogy of movies, right?
Right.
3 hours a piece would have been cool. But they decided to do a television show. So I hope that it's more expansive. I hope that it is a little bit more epic in scope as far as like, you know, areas, but we'll have to see.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. We will have to see. But next time, guys, hey, we will be back. We will be discussing episode, what are we on? Episode 7 of House of the Dragon.
Oh, yeah. This is cool. We're on episode 7, and we will finish the rewatch. As long as we hit every single week, which we should, hopefully.
Yeah.
We will be finishing it the Wednesday right before the show drops. So we will finish episode 10, and then go right into episode 1. Of the new season, which is pretty cool. We're gonna have it perfectly timed.
Yeah, and we still got to figure out exactly what we want to do. You know, we did that. I live streamed and did like a watch party, and we watched it along. A lot of people had fun with that. We have to see. We'll have to see.
If yeah, we're not as focused on YouTube as we were. You know,
we have to see whether we want to do that again. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe we'll go live on TikTok and do it. As long as TikTok is still around then. So,
yeah, I mean, I would definitely expect for us to have podcast episodes dropping, you know, a day after.
They'll be dropped. Yeah, that's not going to be a.
Yeah, because I think, in fact, what we might do, and I don't want to pledge us to this, but, you know, maybe instead of doing that live on the YouTube, maybe me and you just come in here and we record an episode. Right. I mean, we could still go live if we wanted to, but that live was a lot more like interacting with the chat and stuff, which was fun. But of course, there's people who are coming in just to, you know,
spoil. Roughly. Yeah.
Spoil is big. Spoil. Yeah. We did have a problem with spoilers, which sucks because we know there's a lot of people who haven't read Fire and Blood and we don't want to ruin it for anybody. So who knows? Yeah. All we know is we're excited. It's going to be a huge time for the podcast. And me and Matt are going to be screaming.
Yeah. we're gonna be going nuts. So
yeah,
all right, guys, hey, with that, so we will see you guys next time again, continuing our House of the Dragon rewatch. So episode 7, if you like the podcast, be sure to subscribe. If you can, give us a review on iTunes. It's a huge help to the podcast, and remember that winter is coming.